sodas and stuff in the fridge.
That's what I'm saying, I have to steal some, anybody else?
Don't start recording until we are done.
I got waters and sodas, waters.
This is really good.
Coke, Pepsi.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Where'd all the soda go? Well, let's listen to this CD here.
Who stocks this?
All right, well, good afternoon, everybody. I'm Shane Drifczynski from the Philosophy Program and the Chair of this Grievance Committee meeting. And let's allow everybody to introduce themselves before we proceed.
Yan Lee, Electrical Engineering.
Yan Guang from Math Department.
Farron Parsons, Psychology.
Mary Rose Williams from Media Studies.
Tom Kaywood, Criminal Justice.
Sabina Patton, Criminal Justice.
Roger Burton, I'm Sabina's husband.
Sure. Now, the purpose of this hearing is just to hear both sides of the grievance that Sabina is raising, and we will only look at those issues that are raised in the grievance and things that would be beyond the purview of that. It isn't any kind of employee hearing or anything like that. No one will lose their job as a result of this or anything of that sort. And I talked to System Legal about it, and Roger's welcome to attend the meeting. And Tom had asked that this be a closed meeting, and if you're satisfied with the number of people who are here and no one else allowed, we could have a vote then to close it to simply those who are here in the room.
I would like to ask for exemption F of the state statute exempting this as a closed meeting.
Okay.
That's, I think, a right under 1981 talks about the law of requiring open meetings, but there are a number of exceptions, and I would like to exert exemption F on that.
Okay.
Which means now we have to take a public vote, correct?
Correct.
I believe, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's...
What would that involve when you say exception F? What does that mean then if we close it? What does that mean?
Okay, it says considering financial, medical, social, or personal histories or disciplinary data for specific persons, preliminary consideration of specific personnel problems, or the investigation of charges against specific persons, which, if discussed in public, would have likely to have a substantial adverse effect upon the reputation of any person referred to in such history or data or involved in such problems or investigations.
But I think isn't your question, or at least mine, shall we, once we close this meeting...
If we close it, we have to vote to close it,
you know,
right.
That, does anyone have to leave this room?
Well, I think if it's closed, it's only in the two aggrieved parties and the committee for the commission.
Well, my understanding from System Legal is that Roger could still attend this even as a closed meeting. And the recorder, I hope you, we can still...
Well, that's, yes, yeah, that's yeah. obvious
okay.
that that would,
okay.
you'd have to include that.
So if...
I'm certainly not an expert in systems. My understanding of closed versus open meetings includes also who has access to any of the recordings, which I believe is in closed meetings, those are not... public documents, but I'm actually surprised that we even had to vote for that because I have always assumed that all the documentation is confidential. I've always treated it as such in any of these grievances, you know. So it seems somewhat overkill, but maybe then again, I don't understand the definition of the closed meeting. So.
My understanding is that if we vote for a closed meeting, that all that is closed is the, or that we can hear what's going on here, but once we make a decision and we announce that's part of the open meeting.
Right, so none of the deliberations or the details
Correct.
Of discussion
mm-hmm.
are part
Right.
of public record.
Mm-hmm.
That was my understanding.
Right, but in order to close it, we have to have a vote for
yeah.
it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to make sure we all know what we're voting on.
And I'm not sure whether it's a majority vote or not.
Well,
or unanimous.
Yes, it is. It's just
okay.
So, is there a motion to close the meeting?
Sure.
Is there a second?
Okay.
Further discussion? All in favor of closing the meeting?
Aye.
Okay.
Motion. I'm opposed. Okay. Just go on record as okay. I'm opposed to closing.
Motion carries 4-1. All right. Well, I think perhaps the best way to proceed is to allow Sabina some time to present her case. I should hope 15 minutes would be sufficient, and then Tom certainly is entitled to 15 minutes to respond. You may respond to his response, and then Tom will respond to his. And then after that point, I think if there's questions that the committee wants to pose to either Sabina or to Tom, then by all means, let's do so. So Sabina, the floor is yours.
Thank you. First, I have a question because I got Dr. Kaywood's response, and there are some false statements in it, and do I get an opportunity to address those, because here I had an opportunity to address mine. And
at your second response,
okay.
That would be the time
okay.
to do
that's,
that.
That's perfect. I have a couple grievances. The one is like from the very beginning that there is there was just disparate treatment in our department. So, you know, as male members, and I was, as male members, you do better. As female members, you have to prove yourself harder. And I learned it very quickly at my first DRB meeting when I got a 4.3 on my student evaluations, but it was marked above average, even though it's clearly an outstanding mark. And so I kind of learned to kind of, well, you know, I guess, you know, we don't have equality everywhere. And as a female, you have to prove yourself harder. And I wasn't too concerned. I'm a very hard worker, and I have confidence in my qualification. And have, I think, superb qualifications. I worked under some of the best in the industry, including Loftus, Peter Celia, Minor, Pontel, so that I was confident I could. And so this is what I focused on. Then a couple years later, when I went up for promotion, you're like, and it was in my file that I have a teaching history since '96. My promotion request was rejected, and then the male member who went up there too early, he sailed all the way through with a 1-year online master's degree. And I felt like, you know, this is kind of like it's becoming a pattern, you know, in evaluations, in kind of the support I get, and that really, even though I later got the promotion, and there was no question about it because I fully rated it. I mean, I got a sabbatical in my third year, fully paid by the UW system, and I had publication offers. I presented at conferences. I got student engaged in research. I did directed studies, all unpaid. I got publicity, and I really rated it. So I was not concerned about it, but it put a damper on it, kind of like the award, the recognition. And it was just because when I told the DRB chair, Joe Lomax at that time, that, what I mean, like, I don't have sufficient teaching history. I've been teaching since 1996. I have plenty support. I even emailed all the information to him for my application. He went to my file and says, oops, yeah, there it is. So that was really ridiculous because the member on that DRB, most of them were also on my search screen, so that was really not new information. There was also like when I was graded down in the second year when I sent an email to the DRB chair saying that I get room to grow, I get marked down artificially to grow when I worked so hard all my life. I mean, at a point, and male members get outstanding, get sailed through community service. Paid summer camp teaching. It qualifies as community service, just like our newer faculty member, Lauren Gibson, didn't have anything community service. Rates average, just like I did in my first year when I had several categories in it. That kind of really rubbed me the wrong way. So I addressed that with Joe Lomax and said, like, it rubs me the wrong way. It's just like I don't need room to grow. Rate me fairly. If I do poorly on something or slack off, or if there's, then either I have an explanation or, you know, like there is an explanation. I'm not someone who slacks off. I take my job very seriously. And he actually concurred. He actually said, you have a point. I mean, I have an email and I added it to it. Nothing really changed because it's just like the climate in our department. There were a lot of other things where I was caught in the middle. There were allegations made from the very beginning. We had two actually hearings already on that, my first year and my second year, on sexism and discrimination in our department, sexual harassment actually. So there were two from the dean's office were done. And at that time I said, like, I heard the allegations, but I'm kind of in between, and I really did not want to take sides or anything. I was really in a phase still where I wanted to observe and see, and I was just always happy to be here. I mean, I love this school. I love the students. I love that we are a very teaching-focused one, even though I love research too, but it's optional, and you know, we're not forced to do it, so I really appreciate that, these kind of options. So it kind of progressively got a little bit worse, and I saw double standards, and I brought them up too with certain screens with in my first year too, when Eric Dutel basically he wrote his own job advertisement, and I was on a certain screen of Eric Dutel at that time, and we had, and in the end we just had one candidate and nobody else was invited on campus, and he got it. And then when we had the same procedure for other faculty members, at one time was Amy Nomitz who went up, then it was called a failed search, and then we had another search and screen with Joe Lefebvre, and then it was because we only have one candidate left, so we declare this a failed search. And I kind of like thought, that just doesn't sound fair. It just doesn't sound fair. Amy Nemitz didn't get internship one summer, and a second summer only because of pushing. She got in two, way less than the rest of us. Dr. Kaywood said, it's because she is in the online program, and she gets paid all the summer in there, so she does not really rate interns, or she doesn't need them. Okay, there was an explanation that made sense to me, and you know, as long as it sounds just and stuff like, and that's kind of okay. If this is the rule, it's the rule. Well, when he got his candidate, who he picked, Dana Ciso, and she suddenly, then last summer, she got the same amount of interns than the rest of us. And so I was like, well, hoppla, you know, I explained it to Amy Nemitz when she was really unhappy, and I thought, like, well, you know, Amy, this is because, you know, you have, you know, online coordinator. And I really believe in justice and fairness. And I had a tough time because I kind of, like, defended Dr. Kaywood against her, and I had a really tough time. So it's just like in certain screen commissions, in how we were rated, and how we get attention, and, you know, how especially male members, and then Eric Dutel get kind of build up, and the rest of us, if I don't really actively make waves, and the main reason that I have publications, or that, I'm sorry, that I announce my achievements is because I promise my students, if you work in independent research with me and you work hard, I will get you recognition for it. Make sure that there's a write-up on it, and this is something you can print out, you can put in your folder, because it's a very competitive job market for our students, and I really want them, if they work hard, and because of that, one of my students is now with a Bachelor of Science degree in the FBI, which is almost unheard of nowadays, and she got it because of the directed study she did with me. That's what she told me, and that's something she would support. So this is kind of one of the things, just the climate in general, and again, because I was the first woman in federal law enforcement, I'm very familiar with sexual harassment and very familiar with discrimination, because it's not easy to be number one. And so I can live with that. I can work hard, and it's like, you know, I will prove myself. It's just like something that I unfortunately had to get used to. But then we had a student complaint come forward, and a student came to me and showed me a note, and you know, I shared the note with the committee. And I was shocked, and I was especially shocked because I was responsible also, like, as the chair of the search and screen for hiring the candidate. And so for me, it was just, oh my gosh, no, not even because I was instrumental in also getting this person on campus. I felt good. We had three, by the way, and the search and screen commission that I was not allowed to chair now is probably a failed search. When I chaired mine, I had three qualified PhDs ready to come here and work here. So, like, I did a really good job, and we got somebody with two PhDs, by the way, not just one, two PhDs, who is still here. So I proved myself that I can successfully chair search and screen. I can get good candidates. I had 12 candidates. We had four on campus. We had three that we would have been happy with. Okay, so I'm in this regard, I can show I work hard. I only do. And so I had the note, and I didn't want to believe it. I said, like, I hope this is not true. But and I asked her, well, you know, I have to throw the note to Dr. Kaywood. And she says, no, I don't want to talk to a male about it. He says, you know, respect to wishes, but I still have to notify our chair. I mean, as the chair of the program, he needs to know. And he says, I'll find out where else to go, what else to do. So the first thing is I walked upstairs, basically went to the office. It was in 105, and I went upstairs to see whether Dr. K was still there. For he wasn't there anymore, and he wasn't in the office. So sometimes he's probably home because he usually leaves between 3:30 and 4. And it was 4:30. So I just kind of like went home there. I had to respond to an email from the dean troop anyway. I just put a note in there. It's like I have something that looks like an inappropriate, like there's nothing specific on purpose. Because I did not know, and I was still kind of in denial about that it cannot be true. It looks like an inappropriate situation. Where do I take? I mean, I'm telling Dr. Kaywood, where else should I go? And or do I have to do anything else, actually? And she said, tell Atenia Wesley, you know, Dean of Student Affairs about it. She says, okay, great. I actually did then also call a fellow faculty member. At that time, Eric Dutelles, I think he was hired 1 year after me, by the way. I called him because I thought he was a friend. I really considered him a friend. You know, he spent plenty of time in our house. You know, we were on his boat, as his yacht one time with the family. So I really considered him a friend. And he was also my search and screen, and I felt like I need to talk to someone. And I wanted to talk to a friend, so I called him up. And he was somebody who knows. I said, you know, it can't be true. I mean, we could go on. And then he said, he was shocked too, and says, well, you know, I got to do what you got to do. So next morning, before I went to student affairs, I come in after I dropped my kids off. So it was about 8:10, 8:15.
Back up, just fact check. Student affairs, you initially the woman that you were told to go to wasn't there. So
I'll get to that. Okay. So at 10, at 15, so I did not actually go to student affairs. I went right to Dr. Kaywood first. I actually saw, he met him in the office across from mine, not in his office, because I was there doing something. This is kind of like our, maybe store things. And I told him about it. And he just seemed surprised. And it was a very fairly short interaction because there was really not a lot to say. And I'm pretty sure, but I cannot guarantee that I told him that I would go to student affairs next. So I that's just one point I cannot recollect, but it certainly was my intention. And then I went over to student affairs. I didn't have an appointment. I just told him, like, you know, like, is Atenia Wesley there? And he said that she's not available. And then it was Katie. And she then saw me right away, and I took it very seriously. And she said, like, let the students know that, you know, we are here for her, and take it from there. She asked me also, like, to see the note. And so I kind of provided her with that information, and I really felt comfortable. I said, like, okay, I took my job, and I went to class, and then I handled it from there. I felt like, no, it's taken care of and taken seriously. I was actually very pleased. I trust the university with due process in this regard. It's not my room to judge. I did not want to address the faculty member on it because it's not my job. And I thought, like, to this day, I've been very professional with him, but I would not want him over to my house anymore. I don't trust him. I have two teenage girls, and I have a really, really tough time accepting the explanation was given. But I'm very professional. I've been helpful with all that, and I plan to continue doing this. So I then later, after in between classes, I got an email from Dr. Kaywood saying that, it was just a breach experiment. It was basically harmless. And my first reaction actually was I was relieved. I said, great. You know, wow, this is not here a sexual harassment claim, or, you know, like, I mean, I had fear of litigation, all that. And I mean, I teach women in law, and we go over sexual harassment and civil rights and protection, all that. So I was a little afraid for our program, for the school. But then later on, I kind of thought, like, what the heck? You know, I mean, like, this is someone who teaches research method. I taught research method. I mean, I went to a research school. When you do a PhD, you know, when you do experiments with people, you need human subject approval. I mean, this is someone especially who teaches this. This is a no-brainer. You know that. You have to go to the IRB and get permission. So I thought, what the heck? Well, and I said, well, was I part of the experiment? Basically, or, you know, I would like to be informed if this happens again, because it really impacted me and it really cost me time. well, you know, I would kind of like jeopardize the experiment and so on. And he actually gave me a Wikipedia, the first line of Wikipedia. I mean, I Googled it. It's right there. Wikipedia definition of what a breach experiment is. He says, I know what it is. You like it. But you cannot just experiment with kids. And I told him, like, I told my husband, too. I was like, this is what it is. And he's like, if it was our daughter, we'd be furious. You do not experiment with my daughter. I mean, like, imagine if she had a crush on the professor, and then she calls him up and says, oh, it was just an experiment. I mean, you're like embarrassed for the rest of the time here. You feel like an idiot. And she was really concerned. She didn't know what to do with it. And she told me, she from that time on, she was very uncomfortable in class. She says, I don't really know whether I can come back, whether I can do well on the tests. So I then was actually asked by Dean Troop. The one thing is she didn't want to bring up the name. She says, we leave the name out. We just deal with the issue itself. So I passed it on to Dr. Kaywood. Later I heard that he talked to her anyway, even though he was informed not to do that. That was the instruction from up there. Dean Troop actually asked me to talk to the student, kind of tell her that, you know, that the school takes it seriously and we wanted to be comfortable. The entire time I conversed with the student, I'd never let her know my suspicion or my discomfort with it. I told her, like, looks like an experiment or something, you know, that was given, and it's harmless, nothing that you really should worry about. And our biggest desire is that you're comfortable in class again. And let us know what we can do to make you comfortable. And she then felt like, well, it may take some while and stuff, I'm just really uncomfortable, but he's been kind of not getting close to her anymore, so in classroom kind of worked. And I had her in two of my classes, so I saw a lot and tried to kind of help her and said, like, whenever you need to talk, you can come to me. So, and then Dean Troop and said, like, that she wanted the student to either come to her or to Jean Durer if she wanted something, needed something. So I just said, like, you know, keep up on her, I mean, assure her of it. So I did all that. So I really did what I was asked to do. And after that, the relationship in the department became icier and icier for me. And I've been kind of like put under scrutiny. And suddenly I had a research project I've been working on very hard for cybercrime. I so strongly believe in this. Not just because I want to build this kind of big legend for me. From a criminal justice background, we have criminals who get away with so much, whether it is sexual harassment, bullying online, whether it's, you know, pedophiles who kind of go after kids online. Bank robbers. We can still go after bank robbers the traditional way. I mean, like, you know, somebody robs the bank, puts money in the pockets, and this is the big deal. In the meantime, we have people, millions of dollars that are robbed online. And there is such a great need for it. So this is kind of, I'm very, very passionate about, and it gives our students incredible job opportunities. The beginning salary for cybercrime investigators is $80,000. So it's like, this is what I want for our school. There is nothing in the Midwest that pursues it. We can be number one here. We can make Platteville. We can put Platteville on the map on this. So I pursued that before, early last year in 2012. DOJ went thumbs up. This is what we need. Absolutely. I had DCI. This is great for our white-collar crime unit. We need people who are trained in it. Private industry like AT&T, that kind of said, like, this is what we need. Private security. I mean, there was the ASIS conference is for private security, where Johnny Napolitano said, like, private security has to step on it. So I said, great. This is paid internship opportunities. This is funding that we can get because they need people for it. She had the idea with Dr. Kevin, yeah, that sounds like a good thing, this is great. And then we had meetings also, like, from sponsor program and the Office of Entrepreneurship, I believe, Michael Gay, and where then Dr. Kaywood was listed as really kind of the leader of that. So we had meetings with DOJ members, several in the Marquee building. By the way, I want to say that I was repeatedly introduced as Mrs. Burton, and it was Dr. Dutel, and Dr. Kaywood never corrected him on it. So this is something Bob Robertson corrected, actually, and says, no, this is Dr. Burton. But it is something that I thought, like, you know, why the heck? You know, I worked so hard for I got it at a four-year degree. I got it in a foreign language in the United States, in a foreign system. I mean, I worked extremely hard for it. And so I had this kind of program. We did an NSF proposal, which You can only submit if you have the full support of your department, of LNE, of this school. And I had signatures, Dr. Kaywood certified he was supported, signatures from Corey Wine at that time, and then from Mini Nimax. I was sending. No, it's okay. I think they have it. And so I had this kind of support. I was pursuing it. And then there was, we made it to peer review, which I was told is an achievement. Even our wine universities, they usually have to go through up to 3 times to peer review before they kind of get considered. So this is for a non-research university, really an accomplishment. And the feedback I got was very, very positive. And I said, and basically what also was mentioned from the director of NSF is for that particular grant, that we do not fund curriculum development, so we cannot fund something from the scratch. So I said, okay, so I'm not giving up here. I will get some first funding so we can do curriculum development, if this is kind of the hurdle. The project summary, by the way, also states that what Dr. Kaywood supported, what the school supported, that we will get a Bachelor of Science degree in cybersecurity. Okay, so then later to say like that I never had the support of the school is defamation. It's nothing else, because I did have it, and I have it certified, and I can prove it. So everything that I put in my documents, I have evidence for. I want to say that too, because I was really an investigator, not just a one-year state trooper. I was a real investigator, and I was trained in investigation. So I know how to prepare a case for court and how to prepare a case to stand up for proof beyond a reasonable doubt. So I know how to do that kind of work. So I pursued I used portions from the NSF proposal and sent it to AT&T to see if I can get funding from them. They actually sent it first to Travis Tranel, who I met at the Process for the Rotunda event, and he was very interested in the research I did with the work I do with our student. He says, if you ever need something, come to me. So I thought, great. You know, I emailed him and says, there's something where I feel strong about. I think we can really do something great. And he says, great, I'll help you. I got also from the Wisconsin Technology Council, I got an email back too. It's like, you know, it's great. We want to fund you, we want to help you with this. And then AT&T came through and says, we have funding for you. We don't have a lot left because it was more toward the end of the year, but, you know, and we will have more. I mean, like, this is great. I mean, we are very supportive. Fill out the application for it. This is great. You know, I use stuff from the NSF proposal and the summary and tell them, like, what we kind of plan to do. And they approved it. In fact, he liked it so much that he says, like, I will get more money. He says, like, you know, like, from $7,000, I got $7,000. He says, we can probably do $10,000, and next year we can do more. So, like, he said, like, we will do more. I mean, he came personally to the university. I mean, he lives in Madison, and he works between Madison and Milwaukee. He drove down here to tell me that in person. Okay? Extremely supportive, very, very nice man. And so I got the grant. I was all excited. Dr. Kaywood had the health problems at that time, so I sent an email. I said, wow, this is something he can feel good about. So I was really psyched. I was so excited. I said, this is great, and I can use it in sponsor programs. Said, this will help you get more grants because it shows like the industry had interest to qualify. This is great. I was really excited. So I said, great, we're ready for the next round of NSF proposal. There was one in October, I believe, November, and then another one, I guess, in December. They were slightly a little bit different, but for our cyber grant program, we would have qualified for both of them. We had one ready, and I was working on it already. That was something I spent a lot of my free time, my weekends for, and I was happy to do with. I had students already lined up for kind of doing research in that. We prepared a presentation at the Academy of Forensic Sciences because cyber forensics and cyber investigation falls into this category, and I have a background in forensic psychology. I worked in profiling in Germany, so this is really a forum where I'm very well suited for. So we were ready for the next round, and then because sponsor programs, because they have a lot to do. I mean, like they really work. I mean, late hours and all that stuff. It's basically Bob Roberts right now. He said like he would have powered through the night and then have it ready pretty much last moment, which was the same for our NSF proposal. It was pretty much last moment sent forward. The main reason he has a stack of stuff on his desk to handle. And Dean Troop didn't want, said like, you know, I have other stuff going on and I don't want to do things last minute and stuff, so I will not sign it in so short notice. So I first was disappointed, and then said, oh, well, you know, and actually sent that to or Dr. Cabot was CC'd on that, and he just said, oh, don't worry about it. There's another round in December. So again, you're like, if there really wasn't any support, why the heck did he encourage me to go keep working on this and go for another round in December? So, and that was actually, it was either, I think that was the day the student complaint came forward, and it's in my documents. It must have been October 10th when he sent that out. So my life in regard to research opportunities on my project changed in the next day after the student complaint, because that was the end for support for my projects. Things really changed. I became more and more isolated in the program. And at first, I thought, who I thought was a friend in the department, I learned like they are working very closely together. And this is someone who has been directly benefiting from this work of Dr. Kaywood, who are, you know, like, and suddenly we have people with just master degrees who are on full faculty members and make the same. Actually, and then I find out that Eric Tuttle has a higher base salary and made $14,000 more last year, and you start to wonder, right? But so, and then.
Dr. Burton, I'm going to ask you to wrap it up.
Okay, okay, so okay, not... thank you. And then the one thing was before Christmas, things got a little bit better, and then after Christmas, 3-4 days before the check presentation from AT&T, there was more formality, it was a big announcement. I got a very devastating email from Dr. Kaywood, where he basically said, like, I would caution you to kind of act as if you have the support of the university and the program, and you do not have it. And so, like, that was, and then also, like, what you put on the website, you can't do this and stuff like this. And I just thought, like, but he saw those sites, and he never had a problem with four. And now suddenly he has a problem with everything I do. I have to jump through hurdles for everything I do. And that was really, that was for me the breaking point, honestly. And it was the same day when I learned that my dad is terminally ill. And then Dr. Cable brought up that he had some family issues and stuff like that. I didn't put it in there because I'm not blaming him for it. But my dad passed away and all that. And the day I was supposed to leave to be on my dad's gravesite, I got a proposal graded in red like I'm a stupid little student. And then this thing is full of mistakes over and over. It's written like you could not even send this to graduate school. You know, this is really humiliating just because I like punctuation error there. Questions my expertise in this encryption. I worked intelligence, we encrypted stuff. That was my expertise. This is my background. And in saying like you're some stupid little kid, you need then somebody from computer science to come in and help. You get someone from computer science. Just one humiliation and kind of after the other. And that was a time when, you know, like, I know this is part of life. And I lost my dad. My mom then got in the hospital because she fell down the stairs and she almost died twice last year. This is part of life, I understand. But he had no mercy for me to kind of slap me around during that time, you know, like not physically, but, you know, so these kind of things. And not once was I explained what I did wrong, and I asked repeatedly, tell me what I did wrong, except for the student complaint. I need to know. If I did something wrong, I will apologize. I own my mistakes, and then I make up for it, and I fix them. But if the student complaint is the reason that I don't have support anymore, that my work is cut, and my students are now suffering too who do research or work and cannot get funding or don't get proper funding, then this is wrong. I'm protected by law against retaliation. I'm protected by law against sexual harassment. I'm protected by law against sexual discrimination. And I cannot, working in the criminal justice department, just take it. I have to stand up for my female student and for justice. This is why I chose this. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. Dr. Kaywood, you are entitled to at least the equal amount of time. So
I would just like to make a brief statement then to provide a reply to some of these allegations. I believe I've provided written documentation to some of these allegations. This commission is, I think, the appropriate body to hear a complaint or grievance between faculty. The faculty handbook is very explicit on how this commission proceeds. Thank you, I think, for your willingness to serve on this commission. In the 20 years that I've been here at this university, I can recall one recent history where the body was constituted to hear a grievance. This speaks, I think, of the collegiality of the faculty on this campus. I've seen chancellors come and go. I've seen provosts come and go. I've seen deans come and go. I think one of the key hallmarks is the faculty that stay here are the backbone of faculty governance. There have been a number of allegations leveled against me. I think if you look through the record, not once have I ever refused a request from Sabina for an overload to teach during the winter, to teach during the pre-session. In the appendix of my reply, you see the listing of all the courses she has taught as overloads or in these other time frames above her 12 credits for the normal load. I understand the need of faculty to supplement their salaries to support their families. I've never refused any faculty member who asks for additional teaching, who wants to teach an overload, who wants to teach a current topics, whatever. I've been very supportive of what they want to do because I know what the salaries are. And I have been, I think, very supportive of that. Talking about a recent example here for the PACE project where she submitted some PACE projects. I signed off on that. I think I raised the concern that she was doing too much. I've raised this several times in the communication. I was concerned that she, as a faculty member, was doing too much. Teaching full-time, 12 credits, teaching an overload, directing an intern, also doing a graduate student paper, plus then all this activity for the PACE project. So that's what I was concerned about there. I've not treated her any differently than any other faculty member when they've applied for a grant. Okay, we've been actively involved in grants. I mean, multiple people in the department have put forth grants and so forth. I sign off on those. Okay, I've signed off on Sabina's request for these. The problem results when I question what she's doing, not that she is doing something. The graduate course is a good example of this, where this here, this appeared in my mailbox 4 days before it was scheduled to be presented to the grad council. I had a concern about the word usage. I also had a concern about part of the content. I spoke to David Van Buren, the dean of the graduate program. Who better to talk about course development and course content than the dean of the graduate school? David has been a member of the criminal justice department since I've been here. Okay. What we were trying to do here is figuring out what we can do to get this course approved. All right. What best way to make it through all the landmines of all the objections of all the other departments? Okay. It wasn't that I disproved the course. Okay, this is a course that had been talked about previously. Dr. Fuller had notified her of doing this. We know this course was coming down the pike. So it wasn't a problem. We didn't have a problem with the course, just some of the content. And so that's why I talked to Dave, and I said, here's some suggestions. You know, that we make these changes, and the aspects about part of it there was really coming from Dave. It says this really needs to focus more on the criminological theory aspect and so forth. So our intent, it was not to shoot down the course, but to make it better so when she went through the process, there would be no objections from anyone else on the council. Now, everyone here knows that once you get a course approved through the curriculum committee, what you do with it afterwards is up to you. No one checks it. But to present it to the committee, to the grad council, to a curriculum committee, these are the things we need to go through to make sure it gets through there. Hey, and then afterwards, if they want to make some changes, we have no control over that. It's not reviewed by any other body after it's been approved. Okay? So that's what we did. That was our intent. Okay, if I wrote it out in red pen, that's probably the only thing I had in my hand at the time. I tried to reply to this as quickly as possible because we knew we were under a deadline. Okay, I didn't wait to the last minute to submit the proposal. I tried to get to Dave to figure out so we can get back to it. Dave made extraordinary efforts to make sure that we got it signed off, because I said, once she made the changes, and yes, I did. If she wants this to go through, she will make these changes. Because we made the suggestion, say, here, try to do this, and it'll make it easier. And so I told her, she makes the changes, or I won't sign. She made the changes, I signed it, I took the dean, we got it signed. Dave did everything he could to try to get it on that agenda for that Thursday. Okay? Not once was there everything dealing with whether or not she could teach the course or not. We're just trying to get it ready to go through the grad council. I think any time a concern is raised, she sees it as a challenge to her personally. It's not. I'm responsible for every member of the criminal justice department. Part of that responsibility is looking out for the well-being of all of the faculty, as well as looking out what is for the best interest as a whole. Okay. Now, she's raised several issues about DRB. I'm not the chair of the DRB. As a department chair, you cannot be the chair of the DRB. I'm only a member of the DRB. I no longer serve on any search and screens. I tried to lay this out in my reply about some of the problems this department has had. Okay, from the beginning, I came here in 1991. There was a contentious time before I got here. So to say that our department has been smooth sailing isn't so. Okay, I mean, we've never been like economics. Okay, and the problems they've had. Okay. But to say there's been some problems, sure. Have there been investigations? We had hearings. I mean, we met with the dean. We met with she assigned Allison Bunty to look into this. Part of the contention of all of this dealt with who controlled the graduate program, the criminal justice master's program. That was the emphasis of those investigations. Okay, and to come back then that Dr. Fuller, as a member of the Criminal Justice Department, director of the graduate program, reports to the department chair. Doesn't matter who the chair is, who the director is, that person reports to the department chair. Every faculty member reports to the department chair. I report to the dean reports to the provost reports to the chancellor. That's how it works here. I'm responsible for what goes on in that department. I'm accountable for what happens in that department. Okay. And so, again, I think, you know, there's been a lot of issues raised here, rightly so, and I think this is the appropriate body to address these concerns. Thank you.
Well, Sabrina, if you wouldn't mind taking just a few minutes, and I guess if others don't mind me directing your comments, I know you have disagreements with Tom's statement, so I'd rather you focus on that than on anything else that was part of your initial grievance.
No,
and then Tom would have a chance to respond to that.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. Thank you. There are some statements that really don't make sense. For example, it was between some page one. First it says, like, not everyone in the department was supportive of FI. This is like in the second paragraph. This is in direct contradiction to the letter he wrote me on January 24th when he says, like, we had complete, it was overwhelming. In fact, to quote, it says, like, it, meaning this, the FI program, had overwhelming support of the department. Oh, not everyone in the department was supportive of FI. And then he talks about, on and on, how tough it was. So coming from an investigative point of view, as an investigator, you would be very, you know, we hear contradictions. It's just not a really good sign. Then between 2004 and 2006, four faculty members had been hired by the department. Eric Dutel was not a faculty member until 2010, the year after I was. So this is inaccurate. Eric, Susan Hillel, Dale Kapler, Laura Corky. Well, Eric is the only one left. It's also because he has personally benefited the entire years from it. He's been carried. Also, like with the offices, was assigned by seniority. When I came in, Eric Dutel was an academic staff. He was a junior academic staff member. The office was not moved. He should have moved. I would have gone in. All the other schools I've ever was to, if you as a faculty and senior, we always had to move. I had to move several times. I'm working for University of California in Irvine. This is one of those things. And business is doing the same thing. We share this suite with business department. They make their people move. And these are the prestigious offices. And I, even today, had the assistant attorney general come. I did not really invite her to my office because it's one of the least desirable offices in the department. And this is really embarrassing. And students often think, like, I'm just like Mrs. Burton because the academic staff members, you know, like, except for Cheryl Fuller, Dr. Fuller, they have the prestigious window offices. So at that time, he was just a junior academic staff member, and he had the better office and did not have to move for me. Then there is a lot of stuff that's really not relevant, that really doesn't make any sense to, and that also does not address the threat, that I was really threatened and made uncomfortable, and was told, like, you better kind of go along with us and do not endorse Amy Nemitz and don't take sides with Dr. Fuller, or, you know, you have to go to the DRB meetings. So that was pressure, and that was also mentioned in my notes, and that was not addressed here in this rebuttal, so therefore it stands. He wrote later on page 3, Sheriff Fauci should not have reported to a department chair when the other coordinators report to a dean. That's really also not quite true. So there's a lot of the things with how it happened that Dr. Fuller then reported directly to the dean is because of her sexual harassment claims against Dr. Kaywood. And this is how the dean's office on Mindy Nemox then, who's now our provost, decided that it would be best way that she removes those two and Dr. Fuller reports directly to Dr. Kaywood. The dean's office. That was since reversed, and I had actually something to do with it because there were some issues in how a grad student's paper was handled. Going on here, page number 4, it says about the criminal justice hierarchical organization. It talks about faculty governance and everything. How does it then work that our affirmative action officer, the director of HR, said, Dr. Kaywood repeatedly ignored her attempts to kind of have him come in and talk and then maybe attempt a mediation here. So this is something that does not make sense. And her own wording, ignored. And this is the email that I added to it. Then he goes on, with his family issues, his health issues. I don't have anything to do with it. I don't think he should use that against me in this kind of rebuttal. I had health issues too. I usually keep them quiet. Then he goes on, and some of the stuff I had trouble with because of grammar issue and stuff. Email, series of emails, I don't know what that means because there was usually one or two, so that doesn't make any sense. He kind of goes on and on about, when I questioned the internship distribution, and that was really because I felt bad that I, Dr. Nemitz, that I told her, you got less because of you are the undergraduate coordinator. And what he never addressed either is that I make $14,000 less than Eric Dutel with the one-year master's. Then he brings up complaints made to his wife about the university. I don't know why he has to drag in his wife in this kind of stuff. One thing is that he does not have any support for it, and this is just, at this point, only hearsay. I did not complain about the university, but I did complain about the online graduate program because we had about a student who, according to, and I asked Dean Troop at that time for advice, when she looked at the paper, said he writes on a sixth grade level. And this person got A's in B's, mostly A's. And I later found out from Dr. Fuller that Dr. Kaywood was actually his instructor in the online graduate program. And because of his past grade endorsement, getting A's, and having such a high GPA that he could have gotten a master's of science degree with a C- in his seminar, I thought that was just unbelievable. He made so many mistakes in it, and I have nothing personal against it, but I felt very strongly about not endorsing a paper, not endorsing a master's under those circumstances. I was pressured, actually, by the director of the graduate program to just let him pass and stuff so he wouldn't make waves, but I fought this. And this is why later it says, if you look at where he wrote, as an excellent example of support, I sent off on, basically I supported her, and that's why is this an excellent example of support? He did his job. It's really crazy that, I have to be thankful. The same was... That it's the same with the overall requests granted. Let's keep in mind that we are highly understaffed. We have Bachelor of Science people teach in our program, okay? If you would tell that to parents of our students that their tuition fee gets them teaching from Bachelor of Science instructors, I think that would be a little scandalous. I wouldn't want this. So he is pretty lucky that he has me teaching overload, okay? I have a high-quality PhD, I have work experience. So it's really not so he's doing a favor. By the way, everybody else gets overload too. I think everybody in our department teaches overload. So to kind of make this as, I am so supportive of you, it's ridiculous. I'm sorry that I get upset, but this is just, I've been dealing with this a lot here. Also not in 21 years I've been here as a decision department provided funding. I'm sorry, this is not my English, okay? Provided funding to a faculty member for two different conferences.
this is kind of embarrassing, okay? This is really embarrassing. So I'm kind of like, no, attack, because in fall semester I took took four students to a conference in Chicago, and they did such a good job, they were mistaken for graduate students and one even for professor, which is a great endorsement for our school. And we had endorsement even from FBA people there who kind of gave their cards and said, if you ever need something, we help you. And then I dared to take students to a conference in Washington, D.C., where out of eight undergraduate students, two of them were my students presenting. This is a conference with over 6,000 members. I think this is an accomplishment. So when I then dare to ask for more support, and then my students get $250, I get $200 from the Department of Criminal Justice as support for going there. You know, basically, we travel as inexpensive as possible. We only stayed two nights. We didn't stay on a conference site like the FI people, by the way, did. They stayed at an hotel that was more than twice as expensive, and we only stayed for two nights, versus they stayed, the other instructor, FI instructor, with a master's degree, she didn't stay the entire week. So, and my students were still discriminated and did not get as much funding as the FI students. Then the whole thing with the PACE projects is ridiculous too. I can work very hard. I know how much I can work, and I've never let my students down. I do an excellent job. I work harder and more than everybody else in the department. I can really say that because nobody else has as many directed studies. I don't get paid for them. I do them for my students, and because I truly believe in research, giving those kind of opportunities. And I love what I'm doing. I'm a workhorse because I enjoy this. This is kind of like what gets me fired up. The more I have to work, the more efficient I am, the more productive I am. It's just my nature. Yeah. So when you give me too much time, it's not good. Then so the PACE project was also part of my curriculum. If he's too concerned about my workload, then don't give me this kind of crap to deal with here, because this is where I'm wasting my time. I would rather work with my students on my research, and I have two publications. They're on hold because of that. I would rather work on that. Then the thing is, I did not force to develop a study abroad course. I'm sorry, when I'm doing my sabbatical, I'm asked by my chair to come into a meeting and then develop a study abroad course. It's not maybe not forcing, but when it comes from your boss, you do it. And this is how I was raised, and this is kind of my upbringing. This is how, in regard to my work environment, this is what I'm used to. And I was given a deadline by the International Study Abroad Office already at the meeting that was where I was invited to by Dr. Kaywood, that by early fall we had to put this through the curriculum committee, which put enormous burden and stress on me during my sabbatical, and I did not complain, and I did it, because when my boss asked me to do something, I deliver. Whether I feel it's fair or not, this is just my nature. So, okay. And, I also like in the entire thing, you always refer to Sabine Burton, and never with my title, and I don't know. It's like it's Dr. Burton and Mr. Dutel. I don't know why that's so hard. I worked very hard for my degree. I think I deserve respect for it. And then when he brings up that I went up for tenure 1 year early, well, Mr. Dutel went up for tenure 3 years early, okay? So I want to just point that out too. And I've been teaching since 96. He's been teaching here since, when was he hired? 2000, so it's in the very beginning. So 2000, between 2004 and 6, so he was somewhere in that time, and we can look that up later. So this kind of really does not make sense. And then he writes here too, a national search was conducted, he was hired in 2009. No, Eric Dutel was hired in 2010. Why is that so hard to get right in this manuscript here? And for him, it was up or out a year? No, it wasn't, because he went up for tenure 1 year early. So this was not an up or out year for him. So please let's get that correct too. The breach experiment, the whole thing already kind of addressed that. Then it says, where it says, Dr. Burton checked my office, I was not there. Later on page 8, he says, where he actually says, Sabina made no effort to contact me that evening. I went to his office, I looked for him, okay? So please do not contradiction within the same document. It's just, in this regard, very weak. And when I said, Sabina spoke to a CJ faculty member, I actually spoke to a friend, somebody I thought was a friend. And I think that, how is that really such a big mistake? It says here, I'm a trained investigator, and I began to investigate this incident. And one thing is, it's not his job to investigate a student complaint on sexual harassment.
And the dean made that very, very clear too. I don't know where he's a trained investigator. He had 1 year as a state trooper in Missouri. That does not make you a trained investigator. So, and this is an assumption we talk about, and I was cautioned not to falsify things that applies to other people too. And, you know, and I did not make false statements, and this is a false statement. And any trained investigator would say, like, if you spend 4 pages basically talking about nothing that really is relevant, when you ask someone, a suspect or a person of interest, did you do this? Did you rob the bank? And they go on a tangent and tell everything. It's a warning flag that you're dealing with someone who actually did something wrong. And this is, like, common knowledge for investigators. Double dipping, this is like two, would address the issue of double dipping. It seems like the meaning of double dipping is kind of like, maybe that should be looked up in the dictionary. He kind of like said that wrong. It says like, double dipping is not when we teach on a side or do something else, not that does not affect our students on our work time here on campus. Yeah, I have been teaching some online classes. I actually stopped teaching for University of Phoenix, which was falsely stated here too. Went in my first semester here because I wanted to give full attention to my students here at the university. And there was double dipping for Eric Dutel because he was paid to teach here on campus and then he disappeared for weeks. And it happened several times and it can be very easily accessed. The last time he disappeared to teach and kind of teach it as a hybrid course, which our students did not pay for. They're paying for brick and mortar instruction, not for some hybrid thingy or so. And this is not what the contract says. He was called back by the chancellor's office. So even though in his publication for his books he mentioned that he went on a Haiti mission, he did not. He didn't make it to Haiti. He was called back by the chancellor's office. So, and he published books, and he gets office time for it, and it's the excellent of support is the best thing, is kind of a, oh, and then he writes here, and that's something that also, like, was one of the reasons that was the student complaint. I felt like I had to go somewhere else but to Dr. Kaywood. When a student here appealed a grade that I gave him, which he, as a student, has a right to, he had to first go to Dr. Kaywood for it. And when Dr. Kaywood told me, like, oh, you know, I'm supporting you in this. Yeah, okay, you know, like, but he told me he didn't even look at the paper. And I thought, like, this is wrong. This is wrong. You cannot support a faculty member. You cannot support that kind of decision without even looking at the student's paper. I did not put it in my grievance complaint because I thought, like, he for sure would say, like, deny that. And then he writes it in here. I did not even look at the paper. This creates litigation, liability for our school here because this student could, like, he has a right that it's looked at. I think this is a really grave. I've never seen that, and I worked at other universities. I've never seen anything like this, that you reject an appeal without looking at the student's problems. And then he says here, when she made false claims, not once. What are these false claims? I'm always accused of it, and I ask repeatedly, what are the false claims? I think I deserve an explanation here. And then he says, too, I don't respond to her emails. Really? This is not what he has done. He's my boss. If I have questions, any clarification, I deserve a response. And then he says, too, a review of emails shows that I've been supportive of Sabina. This is the exact thing. What my thing is, a proof that he was not supportive. My record is clear. I've never refused her request for anything. Again, not true. And I have this in my grievance package. So thank you very much.
Can I take a moment to switch CDs?